Welcome to Time After Time,
a non-sponsored, highly judgmental podcast about time travel
and love
and friendship
and the movies that bring them together into our living rooms.
I'm Helena.
And I'm Paige.
And maybe in an alternate timeline, you've already listened to this podcast
and you loved it.
Let's go. It's the edge of the garden as we know it.
There you go. It's the edge of the garden as we know it. And I feel fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great.
Cool. All right.
We did it.
We did it.
Hey, guys.
We can end the podcast now, I guess.
Hey, friends and time sluts. This week, we are doing the movie...
The edge of the garden. Oh, I think you're right. I don't think it has
There's no B in the beginning.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
We're going to leave it, though.
Yeah, it's going to stay. Yeah, Hallmark movie. We really wanted to get back to our romance roots because it's been a little while.
Yeah, so we thought Hallmark will be, no matter what else it is, a straightforward romance.
Surely there will be romance.
Surely there will be one straightforward couple to root for. In this movie.
Fool me once. Shame on me. Fool me twice, you're not going to fool me again, as the late, great George Bush said.
Is the dead one that said that?
No, it was W. He's not, okay. He's not dead. But he's, you know, he's out of the zeitgeist, so he's late.
He's so 2000 and late,
you know? He's so 2000 and late. This is what I always say about him.
That's who they wrote that lyric about. The late, great Black Eyed Peas.
Fun fact about the late, great Black Eyed Peas.
Wow, I'm just going to start referring to everybody as the late, great.
Honestly, I don't know why we're not doing that more. It's really delightful. And then people will be like, wait. And then you're like, no.
But honestly, the Black Eyed Peas no longer exist in the same form they were in when they wrote the line, you're so 2000 and late? It's yeah, so 2000 and late?
It's so 2000 and late.
That's so 2000 and late? What's the beginning of the line?
Something late. I don't know what the beginning of the line is. You're so 2000 and
late. I think
late.
It's maybe you're so. Let's see.
It's you're so 2000 and late. It's like, it's a burn. It's definitely...
I'm so 3008. You're so 2000 and late.
Okay, so she's, like, in the future. That's her thing.
Yeah. The late, great Fergie.
Also, does the late, great Fergie say, I've always thought that she said people in the place.
Yes.
She says people in the place?
Yeah, there was a whole SNL skit about that recently.
Okay. Really?
Yeah, well, we can come watch that later.
That's really funny. Yeah, because I was about to start riffing on that, but then I was like, wait, but what if she is just saying people in the club?
No, it says people in the place.
People in the place. If you get down. That's insane. Why would that be the line? What a weird line.
It was a pretty good SNL sketch.
Skitch.
Skitch.
The late, great SNL.
The late, great SNL. Okay. We're really...
Yeah. Let's focus. So, Edge of the Garden. Should we summarize it?
Yes. Let's summarize the late, great
Edge of the Garden.
Edge of the Garden. I guess all films are really late, great because
they've happened.
They've happened.
Yeah. When you think about it, we are really just watching something that's already happened.
We are watching dead film.
Wow. Really makes you think. All right, let's get into this.
The year is 2010. Tech exec and Nepo baby, Brian Connor, manages to ruin his relationship with his fiancée, Julie, by missing their engagement party.
Their whole engagement party!
Because he's working too late at Connor Industries, his family's tech company. Realizing he messed up, he decides that he needs to make a big change and get away from it all. Since his company just acquired a small web hosting company in Maine, he decides that he will spend a few months out there getting the company up to speed.
He arrives in Maine and asks around for recommendations on a trusted realtor. Enter Keenan O'Dwyer, the most Maine man you've ever seen, who convinces Brian to buy an obviously haunted house outside of town, even though what he really wanted to buy...
Oh, not buy.
No, not buy. Even though what he really wanted was to rent a furnished condo for a couple of months. So this is, like, really not the same thing at all. This realtor did a bad job.
No, this realtor did a great job.
I mean, yeah, for him, but, like, in terms of customer service.
This realtor is the world's best salesman.
I guess so.
Anyway, Brian immediately starts seeing spooky stuff, like the lights flickering and voices in the house. Also, like, an empty vase all of a sudden has flowers in it. As he starts fixing the house up, he finds an old locket with the words "True Love" etched on it, hidden in a drain. Finally, one night, he sees a woman dressed in 1960s garb outside, sitting on a bench on the edge of the garden.
There it is, folks.
He goes outside to confront her and discovers that she believes that she lives in the house. She says she's looking for the locket that he happens to have in his hand. But when she tries to grab it from him, her hand goes right through it. She freaks out and runs into the house, which is suddenly completely furnished. Her husband is inside, and she tells him that she saw a ghost. Meanwhile, Brian runs into the house after her, but it is the same as it's always looked for him, and the woman is gone.
We spend more time with the woman, whose name is Nora, and learn that her husband, Thomas, is terrible, and she is sick with a mysterious illness, but finds solace in tending her garden and hanging out with the handyman, Frank. Brian starts to realize that the whole haunting thing was probably why the house was so cheap and begins to investigate its history. All the managers in his office are like, "Duh, dude, everybody in town knows that house is haunted." The following night, Brian and Nora meet again in the garden and figure out that it is 1960 for her and 2010 for him.
Nora starts to write letters to Brian and hide them in a box in the fireplace. She tells him more about her life and how lonely she is. Brian meets up with the extremely main realtor, who cryptically tells him that he should stop investigating the house that he literally lives in because, quote-unquote, there's some things that time can't heal. Nora's illness seems to be worsening, but her husband is dismissive and tries to tell her that it's all in her head. Brian describes the symptoms to his doctor friend, who immediately recognizes it as Lyme disease, which was not widely known or treated in the 1960s. Brian gets his friend to send him a list of medicines that would treat Lyme but also be available in 1960. He writes them into the letter and puts it in the fireplace spot in hopes that the communication will work both ways. It somehow does. Nora gets the handyman Frank to take her to the doctor, and the doctor agrees to prescribe all the medicines even though he doesn't know if or why it will work.
At first, the medicines seem to make things worse, but eventually they start working and she gets better. Thomas is suspicious about the mysterious list of medicines and the time that she's spending with Frank. A few days later, she's up on her feet again, and she and Brian meet back in the garden. Brian gets her to tell him the story of the locket. Turns out it's an old family heirloom that supposedly points the way to true love. He tells her about his failed relationship with Julie.
Inspired by Nora, Brian starts fixing up the garden. He makes one of his employees find all the phone books from the area, which doesn't feel like that guy's job. But he's able to track down Nora's husband, Thomas, who is still in the area. They meet up, and he tells Thomas that he thinks he could save Nora, but Thomas gets defensive, claims that her death was an accident, and storms out. Back at work, Brian finally gets the Mainers to tell him the legend of the house. They tell him that Nora tried to leave Thomas, but when he found out that she was going, he locked her in her room and set the house on fire. Only her bedroom burned down, and the rest of the house was fine, but she died in the fire. Finally, someone Googles it, which seems like it would be the first thing that a tech guy would think of, but whatever. He finds an article about the fire and her death.
Suddenly, ex-fiancé Julie arrives in the office. She was at a wedding in New York and decided to visit since she was quote-unquote in the area. More on that later. Mostly, she seems to be there to find out if he's dating someone now. She invites herself over to dinner and they talk about their relationship while she looks for signs of women in the house. While she is there, Brian sees Nora outside crying on the bench, having had a terrible fight with Thomas. He tells her that she needs to leave Thomas as soon as possible so she doesn't die in the fire. While he's outside, Julie snoops around the house, finding the locket and accidentally dropping it into the fire. It sparkles magically.
Nora starts packing her bag, but Thomas locks her in the room, exactly as the story said he would. The locket causes the fire to jump out of the fireplace and start burning the house. When Brian enters the house, he's in 1960. He confronts Thomas and knocks him out, then runs upstairs to save Nora. As they're running out of the house, Thomas appears and threatens them with his shotgun. Before Thomas can shoot, the scene disappears around Brian, and Brian is back in 2010. He discovers that Julie dropped the locket into the fireplace, and he fishes it out. Julie leaves, upset that there is someone else in his life and that their relationship didn't work out. Brian races to the phone book, and as he's looking at Thomas Hargrave's name, it changes to Nora Hargrave. She lived!
He finds her at the nursing home where she now lives, and they reconnect. Turns out she married Frank the Handyman, but always listed her last name as Hargrave in case he came looking for her. He returns her locket, and she introduces him to her granddaughter, Sarah, who mysteriously looks exactly like she did in 1960. Brian and Sarah go for a walk in the garden and presumably live their best main life happily ever after.
The end.
The end. Which brings us to not Blast from the Past.
There's, the internet was like, I don't know anything about this movie or these people. I don't care. So we're going straight to
Magic, Science, Just a Dream.
Here's where we talk about the hows and the whys of the time travel. This is clearly a magic, but Helena, you can weigh in. I was torn. Is this a magic locket? A magic garden?
I don't know. I feel like it's the house itself and maybe like the property. But they kept it really vague. I think the locket, I think she has been like, there is some mystical connection to her and her like whole story that is like continuing to resound around the house, which I think could be like probably classified as like ghost stuff. But I think when he finds the locket is when it turns into like a time travel situation.
Right, so then it would be the locket, not the property.
No, but I think that they have, like, I think that there is already stuff going on, though. You know what I mean? Like, there's already, like a magical thing happening, and then the locket is, like, an additional step that no one else, until Brian, had access
sure.
to.
Okay.
So no one else was able to, like, actually communicate with Nora. But she had been effectively haunting.
Okay, so it was just haunted property, and then the locket was what he was able to communicate and create, like, a lake house vibe.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. That's my guess.
Okay, then can we talk about the locket for a second?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
So the story she tells is that she's like, it was my grandmother's, it comes with a story. My family always thought that it had special powers. My grandfather was a doctor. I'm paraphrasing, but she basically says, my grandfather was a doctor, and one day a sick patient couldn't pay him, so instead they gave him this family heirloom of theirs that they said had magical powers and could point his way to true love because he was single and he was looking for somebody, and then
right.
he met my grandmother. So I'm like, so he took a magical family heirloom from a sick patient?
And didn't, like, sell it. Like, he wasn't, like... I don't know if it makes it better or worse that he didn't sell it. Because it's like, if he needed the money, that would be like a reason to like use this as like, you know, a barter.
Sure.
But if he's just gonna like hold on to it.
Right. Well, she's like, it's my family heirloom. And I'm like, is it though? It sounds like it two generations ago, not that long ago, was somebody else's family heirloom.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they really wanted to pay. They insisted. Maybe they really insisted. And he was like, no, 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 no. And they were like, no, we want you to have this.
Sure. But then I'm like, okay, he takes it and then he meets her grandmother and he's like, oh, this definitely does have magical powers. Then I go back and I find them and I'm like, great. It did magical things for me. You guys should have this back now.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
I don't know.
It definitely seemed a little fishy to me that he would do that. It could have gotten to him a different way, but that's okay.
Or you just don't know. You should have been like, it's been in my family for so many generations. Everybody has had it on them when they found their person.
Sure. Yeah, that's fine. No one has to know the exact origin that he stole a family heirloom from a dying patient.
So weird.
Yeah. But it seems like it has not worked for Nora.
Well, it works in the sense that it eventually brought her... Okay, well, we have to talk about this in the romance. Is Brian her true love or is Frank her true love? Regardless, either way, she gets to them.
Yeah, she does get to them, but I don't know. I think the locket's magical powers are more time travel based than actually, like, true love based.
Sure.
Because, like, she's like, oh, I had my first kiss when I was wearing it. And, like, that's not...
That's not true love.
Yeah, that's not necessarily true love.
Unless that person she had her first kiss with was her true love, and it was just, like, a finite true love, which
we love, but... That wasn't the vibe. It was not the vibe she was giving.
I also like that you say it's just the property, but then magically at the end of the film, all the computers in hosting office.
I don't know about that. That didn't make any sense.
Towards the end of the film, you know, Brian hasn't seen Nora for a while when she's been sick with the Lyme disease. And then all of a sudden he's like in the office one night and all of the computers go dark and their screensavers become flowers, which obviously like reminds him of Nora because she's, like, so into this garden. And he's like, Nora! And he runs and she's in the garden.
It didn't make any sense.
So it's like, now it's the computers... It's like a
random thing.
The computers are also haunted. The computers are now part of it across town. Or
did everyone in web host Maine, which, by the way, is the name of the company. Yes. Great name. Was everyone there just really into flowers? And they all agreed.
I don't think that's what we're supposed to get from that.
I don't think we were. No, you're right. Okay, that is a hole, and I don't really understand it. Also, okay, so can we talk about the mechanics of, like, the final confrontation, like the climactic scene? Because I was, like, very confused about how that worked.
Sure. So what I gathered was happening was the locket caught fire, which seemed to explode its capabilities. And was able to allow Brian to run into the house in 1960.
Uh-huh. And be able to, like, touch stuff. Because yes. Previous to this, like, he and Nora, like, couldn't touch, like, they would, like, go through each other, ghost style.
Yes. And also couldn't see, they would be standing in the same garden, quote unquote, but, like, she was seeing it as it looked in 1960 and he was seeing it as it looked in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, when the locket caught fire... I think that, yes, exploded the time travel capability, so he was able to just be transported all the way back to as if he was in 1960s with them
and
for a few moments.
Sure. Okay, I'll buy that. But then what happens to bring him back? Like, I didn't understand that last moment where, like, Thomas is pointing the gun at him and then everything just disappears. It doesn't seem like there's a reason.
Did you the think locket there was a ran out of its time
it
travel.
It ran
power.
Out of magic.
Yeah.
I feel like they could have had Julie, like, pull it from the fire at that point.
Yeah, that would have been good.
That would have made sense.
Yeah, that would have made sense.
That'd be an easy fix.
Mm-hmm.
But no.
Yeah. No. You are correct. But I, you know, the biggest grace I can give it is, like, it was, like, the last push of the locket. And the locket was, like, tired.
Whew, I'm so tired.
And then I don't really know, I guess... We're supposed to assume, because Nora doesn't really tell us when we meet old Nora, we're supposed to, I guess, just assume that because of, you know, obviously Brian let her out and there was this big distraction, but because of that, Nora was able to just sort of run away.
I would have to assume, like, because I think she'd made the decision to leave Thomas, and the only reason that she died was because she was, like, trapped, and so she was no longer trapped, and therefore she could, like, leave.
Sure, but when Brian, presumably because the scene disappears around Brian, I'm assuming that Brian is disappearing from the scene in 1960, the confrontation between Thomas and Nora.
Uh-huh.
So presumably in 1960, Thomas is still pointing a shotgun at Nora.
Right.
So we're what, to assume that Nora just zigzagged?
I would think so, yeah.
Okay.
Or maybe Thomas is, like, a really bad shot. He's a lawyer, yeah. not a hunter.
Also... Because Thomas's name changed to Nora, are we to assume that Thomas died in the fire?
I did wonder about that. Maybe that's how she ended up getting away from him, is that he died in the fire. I mean, don't know why he would die in the fire, though.
Yeah, I mean,
because,
maybe
Because, like, they were right by the front door. Like, they both easily
Maybe he just,
out.
Like, ran away and moved away because he was then embarrassed of, like, the fact that his wife left him and his house caught fire.
Yeah, I mean, sure, that makes sense.
So he's not in the main phone books anymore. And I guess this is sort of... the next section, but I'm sort of like, well, if the house caught fire, and then Brian could move in there, and obviously
well, the house caught fire in like both versions of the
sure.
The
I mean,
past.
Well, then we're also in a hole of like they're like yeah, just her bedroom caught fire, but if the house caught fire from the fireplace, I don't know how her bedroom caught fire.
I agree. I don't think that lined up with the story that they told. It was sort of weird. A lot of blanks to fill in that 50-year gap, I guess.
But they did it. They changed history, which means there's bound to be some paradoxes.
Yeah.
And that's what it is.
One thing I wondered is, like, if she had never met, if the whole Brian situation had never happened, was there a version of history where she died of Lyme disease? Like, I wonder if he had, like, looked her up. If he had, like, looked her up while she had Lyme disease before he, like, saved her. I wonder if there would have been an article about, like, Maine woman dies of mysterious illness.
Hmm. So you're saying he had already, because he had already changed the past by curing her of Lyme disease, and then you think it was him
It's just a speculation.
And even before he tells her to leave her husband, he's the one who tells her to leave her husband, right? Like, in the story that they're telling
about. Well, that we definitely need to talk about.
Right. He cures her of Lyme disease, let's say. And when they're telling the story, like, oh, this woman died in a fire because she tried to leave her husband, you think, even before he has the conversation with her on the bench, that version of history happened because he later will have the conversation with her on the bench.
That's a good question. I mean, I think either could be true. Like, I think he definitely hastened that experience by being like, you should do the thing that causes your death.
Sure.
In the exact way that your death is caused. But I don't know. I think she maybe would have left him anyway, and maybe that whole situation would have happened.
Yeah, talking about time travel is so confusing.
I know. Why do we do it? Why do we put ourselves through this?
Especially without any sort of trying to talk about it in a way where you don't, as the listener, need to see what my hands are doing.
Yeah, the hands do really add a lot.
Anyway, I just want to say, points to this movie, I thought it was very smart that instead of him being like, I'm going to predict something that happened in 1960, when he's trying to convince her that he's from the future, that he's from 2010, he just pulls out his driver's license. And he's like, look, my birthday is far after the day that you are living. Clearly,
On my driver's license. Where would I get this?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought that was great.
I thought that was a very smart move.
I mean, she was already primed to believe him, too, though, because they had the moment with the locket where her, like, hand went through it.
Yeah.
So she was like, something weird is happening. But yeah, that was a very clean moment, and I was proud of them. Good job. Should we move on?
What have you done? So here's where we continue to talk about the plot holes, because we have been doing that. The time travel plot holes, the non-time travel plot holes, and anything else time travel potpourri related.
Yeah, I think what we touched on with him telling her that she was going to die in the fire and telling her to, like, cause that event to me is, like, the biggest consistency problem. Just, like, in terms of character. Like, why would you do that?
He's like, you try to leave your husband, so he locks you in a room and sets the house on fire. So in order to prevent that, you need to go leave your husband.
Right. I was like, what is this logic?
But also, she's an idiot. Like, they're both idiots. Because I don't know why, if you hear that information as her, you're not like, okay, why don't I, while he's at work tomorrow,
wait till he leaves. Yeah, obviously. Very, very silly. That was just my biggest, like, what the hell moment.
I don't know if I take issue with the letter delivery system or not. In the beginning, I did. Because she's like, I'm going to hide this letter somewhere that nobody would find it for 50 years. And that's why you're going to find it. And then he finds it. But then she keeps leaving new letters. And I'm like, well, then wouldn't all the letters be in there at the same time? It's either, like, all the letters or none of the letters. And then he somehow can put a letter in there for her to find. Which doesn't make any sense if her logic is that
it was just sitting there for 50 years.
So if it's just, like, a magic letter delivery system box, like the mailbox in the lake house, then it's fine. But that's not what you told us it was, movie.
Right. I think they just, like, couldn't figure a way around it. And they were like, well, we have to get this medicine in her somehow.
I don't understand why they couldn't just keep meeting on the bench.
Right. Agreed. You could have done all of that in actual, like, conversations, which probably would have been more interesting to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. The letter delivery system was a big hole as well.
The lake house came out a few years before this. Do you think someone had just, like, watched the lake house and was like, I liked that part?
Probably. Yeah. They couldn't get Sandy Bullock.
It's funny because Frequency, we also talked about, had, like, lake house vibes.
Yeah, which we actually watched. Yeah, it's you know, two people communicating across time rather than, like, moving through time.
Sure. In this movie, at the end, he does
actually physically move through time.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of lake house vibes lately.
I mean, it's a good format. I do like it.
Yeah. Also, we already sort of talked about how the house doesn't look like it was on fire, which I guess maybe people have already done some remodeling, so I guess that's fine.
It doesn't seem like it's been completely unoccupied since the Hargraves, like, since the fire. I think there was another family that had lived there and then moved on. And he said it was unoccupied for, like, 20 years.
Okay.
At some point.
I also thought he remodeled it super well, super quickly.
Very fast. Apparently, he's the world's best contractor. Maybe he should do that instead of his Nepo baby job.
Because by the time Julie gets... When he and Julie walked into that kitchen, I was like, damn, this is a beautiful kitchen.
It looked great. It looked awesome.
This is such a minute point, I guess. But in the first scene, he allegedly misses their engagement party because he's working late, because he says there were bugs in their operating system that he had to fix, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we see him in the office, he is at the printer slash copier, like printing things out and making copies and bringing them back to his desk. I know I'm not a software engineer.
But you don't think he is either.
But like usually when you fix bugs, you don't do that with pen and paper, with anything that needs to be printed or copied.
That's a really good point. I had not like settled in enough to like to get that to catch up, but that's really funny. He was sending memos, you know. He's just doing his computer job.
He just didn't want to be going to his own engagement party because he didn't want to be engaged.
He didn't want to be engaged is what it comes to. But I did really love her line, Julie's line, when she finally, like, he finally sees her and she's, like, walking out. And he's like, Julie, I was just leaving. And she goes, so was I. And then she turns on her heel and walks away. I loved it.
Yeah.
More of that energy, because the rest of Julie's character was awful.
Yeah. Except for her nice bump it.
Loved the bump it. Yeah. More on that later.
My last consistency issue is... So, when Brian goes to save Nora from the fire, her impending death, he magically is in this house. He gets to the door of her bedroom, and it is locked. And she's like, you can't... it's locked. You have to go get the key from Thomas. And I'm like, there's a fire. She's gonna die. Brian, how weak are you? Break down that fucking door.
You can break down the door. He's a big, wide-shouldered man.
He's the world's best contractor.
Yeah. He's been working out. He's been doing reps with wood, with beams.
And or, it's 1960. There are house phones. Call 911.
I mean... Yeah, you could call 911, but I think it is more pertinent to get her out as soon as possible.
Yes, that, but all I do of think the above.
I do think that he could have definitely just shouldered the door open. I think you're really right about that. Can I talk about some main consistency issues?
Yes, of course. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. Take it away. I just have a whole list. I love that this movie was set in Maine, specifically Mid-Coast Maine, which is a place that I spent a lot of time in and have, like, so much love in my heart for it. It's a very special place. Some of it was super accurate. Like, the super main realtor, he had, like, a bucket hat and, like, he was just really scruffy. And he was like, no, you have to buy this house. I loved that. Very stubborn. Very cool. But some of my issues, first of all, Brian, honey, there are no condos in Mid-Coast Maine. It's not a thing. If you want a condo, you can go to Portland, which is not that far away, but you will have to drive if you're... company is in Midcoast, which it clearly is based on all the exteriors. So don't go to Maine, don't go to Midcoast looking for a brand new condo. It's not gonna happen. Also, loved that she got Lyme disease, very Maine core. Like, perfect. I thought for sure it was gonna be consumption, and I was like, well, they kind of know how to deal with consumption, so like, is she gonna die of consumption in 1960? Because that would be silly. But no, it was Lyme disease, and it was right on the money for Maine because they have a lot of fucking Lyme disease there. Everyone's always real worried about the Lyme.
Have you ever gotten Lyme disease?
In Maine?
Yeah.
No, I haven't, luckily. But everyone's always like, if you're going on that hike that you're going on, make sure you wear long pants and check yourself for ticks afterwards. There's a big problem with Lyme disease. It's the summer.
Mm.
So, yeah. Also, I had a big problem with all of the food in Maine because, like, Maine is not a diverse place. It's one of the whitest places ever. And especially, like, once you get outside of Portland, it really is, you know, there's not a whole lot of food options. Maybe in the last couple of years, some more, like, places have opened. But, like, when I was in Maine in, like, 2017, it was, like, huge news that someone opened, like, a Mexican food truck. It was enormous news. Like, that had never happened, and people were freaking out, and there was, like, lines all the time. So, like, they kept being like, we're going out for margaritas and tacos. And I was like, no, you're not. It's 2010. There is no Mexican place. I can tell you for sure. And then she like got Chinese takeout. And I was like, there's like one Thai place in like the whole region. And like, it's in this one town. And everybody knows it's the only place for Asian food in the entire region. Anyway, I just, it wasn't believable.
Mm.
As someone who knows.
They should have only gotten takeout from Moody's Diner.
That honestly, yeah, they should have. How great would that be if there was like a Moody's Diner part of this movie? I would love that.
Shout out.
Shout out. Shout out. Okay, and then also, Julie being like, I was in the area when she was in New York for a wedding.
Yes.
Incredible. It's at least 6 hours.
Yeah.
Usually longer.
Yeah. As someone who recently drove from New York to... Well, I guess, I don't know. Is Acadia?
No, but you drove through, like, you drove through Midcoast.
Okay.
Like, when you went to Moody's, that yeah. was Midcoast.
Yeah, that was at least 6 hours. It was, like, 8 to Acadia.
Yeah, that sounds right. But, yeah, it's not close. You could take a really short flight, and that's, like, an easy way to get there. But it's also, it's not easy, like, once you arrive in Portland. Like, it's not an easy place to get to. You can't drop by. Even if you live in San Francisco, that's still, like, a significant journey.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you, like, haven't called him to be like, do you want me to come by? Are right. you going to be in town?
Yeah, what if he had, like, taken a business trip? Or, like, I don't know, went to Acadia?
Yeah, or went back to San Francisco to see his parents.
Any of those things are plausible. But Julie was like, no, I'm showing up. Because I need to know if my ex-fiancé is seeing someone. And I can't just ask. I'm going to snoop.
Anything else?
No, I think that's it. I think we got it.
Great.
Does their love stand the test of time?
So here's your talk about the romance. And like I said, with Hallmark, I should just be like, great, let's talk about Brian and Nora's romance.
No.
I don't.
No. Who is the central romantic couple of this movie?
At the end, it was made clear that there was a romantic love between Brian and Nora. Thank yeah. fucking God. Just for my sanity.
Because she said, you know, I loved you back then. And he said, I loved you too, but it was like yesterday for me.
Yeah. She says, I loved you back then, you know, all those years. Old Nora says that to him. And he says, I loved you too, but it doesn't seem that long ago. They also have moments like when they're in the garden, they try to like, they put their hands near each other. Obviously they can't touch, but she asks him, do you feel that? And he says, I'm beginning to feel that if you care about someone enough, time doesn't mean a thing. And she says, I wish that were true. She says, Brian, if things were different, if time were on our side. But, you know, when we watch these movies, we're used to them figuring it out.
Right. And eventually they end up, like, kissing in some way.
Right. And she's able to, like, come to 2010 as her young hot self, or he's able to go back to 1960 and stay there.
Didn't we have another movie where the person ended up with, like, the granddaughter?
Probably.
Which, it was, I think it was that really old one that we did. Hold on, I'll find
it. Oh, that. Yes. Berkeley Square. It was, Berkeley that Square, the, yeah. The name of it that we went with, but that was one of the
names. One of the names of it, yeah. If you'd like to look it up. Here, let me
It was like, as if we never, I could never forget you. I'll never forget you.
It's called I'll Never Forget You. Good job.
Thank you.
Yeah. Also known as Berkeley Square. But yeah, he ends up with, like, the young, hot daughter or something that, like, looks exactly the same and is played by the same actress.
Yeah. I don't think it was played by the same actress here.
Yeah, it was.
It was?
Yeah.
Also, didn't that also happen in the one with Bing Crosby?
Oh, yeah, it did. It did. Connecticut Yankee.
Mm-hmm. It's funny how it only happens with young, hot women.
It's weird.
It doesn't go the other way. I just want to double check.
Yeah, I would like to know, because I thought it was the same lady.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Nora Hargett and Sarah. Okay, mm-hmm. You're right. She's had longer hair.
It's very confusing, I know, when women grow their hair or cut it. But, yeah, it's a weird vibe when you're like, well, I was in love with your grandmother, who is an entirely different person from you, who you happen to look like.
But she's too wrinkly now.
But she's really wrinkly now, so do you want to go on a date?
Well, and this is the first one where, like, Grandma is still alive and wrinkly. Like, in A Connecticut yeah, Yankee yeah. and I'll Never Forget You, Grandma's dead.
Right, right. They've been long dead. Yeah.
Like, generations have passed. Anyway, so there was some sort of romantic love between Brian and Nora, but, like, we're not supposed to root for them, I guess. I don't know. And then, so then I'm like, okay, are we supposed to be rooting for Nora and Frank and Brian and Julie?
Definitely not Brian and Julie.
And yes, and then it became very clear at the end, because I, but in the middle of the movie, when it became clear that we were supposed to be rooting for Nora and Frank, I was like, okay, so maybe Nora and Brian are going to, like, learn lessons from each other. Nora's going to, like, leave Thomas to be with Frank, and, like, Brian's going to learn enough to go fix his relationship with Julie.
Okay, I could see a version of the movie where that happened. I would be more comfortable with that than Nora setting up her daughter with her ex-boyfriend.
Granddaughter.
Oh, yeah, granddaughter with her ex-boyfriend.
But that didn't happen either, because Brian, it turned out, didn't, like, Julie that much. And what he learned from, not even really Nora, what he learned from the hot married lady who runs the main...
Who I cannot wait to talk about.
Runs the main web hosting company.
Web host main.
Was basically, like, sometimes you have to take other people's expectations out of it. And he's like, oh, I guess I was just with Julie because people expected me to be. And then we got engaged because people expected us to get engaged. Blah, blah, blah. So I guess Brian just, I don't know. He loved Nora, so then he's going to get with her granddaughter. So then the person that our main guy is supposed to fall in love with, we don't meet to the last, like, 30 seconds of the movie. Do we hear her talk at all? We maybe hear her say, like, hi, Grandma, or hi, Brian. It's nice to meet you. So I don't know if their love is going
to
stay there.
I think she was like, would you like to take a walk around the garden? That was her only line.
And Nora's putting a whole lot of pressure.
Yeah, Nora really wants it to work out so she can, like, weirdly live through her daughter.
Which seems sort of in contrast with the movie's whole thing about, like, don't let other people's expectations define your relationship.
That's a really good point, Paige.
But anyway, at the end, Nora says to Brian, after Brian's like, I loved you, and that was, like, yesterday for me, she says, I lived a lifetime since then, a wonderful, happy lifetime, all thanks to you. Now it's your turn. Go on, take that walk. See where it takes you. I'm just saying, it's a lot of pressure she's putting on him to find, she's like, well, find that happy life only with my granddaughter. And at least he has some, like, investment in that. And now she's like, granddaughter, this you man don't know you've this never man. Met.
Yeah.
Who, this man who wanted to get with me. So, like, it's so much weirder for Sarah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the really fun thing about that romance, which I thought of all on my own. Again, I looked on the IMDb trivia to see if anyone else had, like, put this up there, and they had not. His name is Brian Connor.
Right.
If Sarah marries him, and it's Hallmark, so she will change her name.
Right.
If Sarah marries him, she becomes Sarah Connor. And now we're back in another time travel movie. Sarah Connor is very notoriously the love interest, the heroine of the Terminator franchise.
I love this. I love this world building you're doing. This is great. Yes.
So.
Wow. Thrilling. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So yeah, I think Brian and Sarah are gonna weirdly get married and stay together forever because
Sarah's not forever, because she will have to end up doing the whole thing with the Terminator. But
sure. She will become Linda Hamilton.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, but I hope for their sakes that it is true love and not just because Sarah's grandmother is sort of living vicariously.
I mean, yeah. She found the locket, so, like, maybe that will convince her. Maybe the locket will tell them if they should be together or not. Maybe they can, like, whisper and be like, hey, should we do this?
I mean, I guess. Nora had the locket when she married Thomas.
Do you think Nora will be, like, will not want them to, like, continue living in the house?
No, I think Nora wants them to continue living in the house and, like, tending the garden. I think Nora and Frank are gonna move into the house. Everyone's gonna die there.
Yeah,
and probably. Then they're all gonna haunt it together for eternity.
That sounds nice. Like, okay. A big old family haunting.
All right. Do you have anything else you want to say about any of these romances? There's so many. Frank seems nice.
I really like Nora and Frank. I wish we got more of them together.
Yeah.
But I guess we had to focus on the Brian thing for some reason.
I like that Frank was a poet, because he was like a handyman, and then all of a sudden he was like ripping out a Kipling poem.
That was nice. Yeah, he was a sweetie pie, and he wanted to take good care of her and, like, listen to her, which is nice.
And he was very handsome.
Yeah. I did think that the casting of the men in the 1960s, like, both of them were not very good actors, but
sure.
That's its own issue.
Yeah. There's a reason that there was nobody in this movie that was notable enough for me to do a Blast from the Past. Brian has worked the most, so.
What do we think about Brian's cheek implants?
I didn't notice them. I'm so bad at noticing cheek implants.
I found them really distracting. I mean, I hope he was happy with them, but.
I mean, he's done a lot of procedural television work since then, so. Great. They're clearly working for him.
That's awesome. I love that for him. All right.
Ladies, did we just time travel back to the 1950s?
Or 60s?
60s. So here's where we talk about the feminism of it all.
Where should we begin? Should we begin with the office lady?
Sure, let's set the scene. Let's talk about Brian as office man coming into this office setup.
Yes.
And we can talk about office lady. So, okay, first of all, as stated in the summary, Brian is a Nepo baby. This is his family's company. Just keep in mind that he's a Nepo baby as he's, like, coming in to this main web hosting company that this woman has clearly, like, started from scratch and being, like, kind of hard to focus on work when every day is casual Friday.
Yeah, he's, like, a huge dick about office culture, which is so lame.
Yeah.
He's, like, nobody's allowed to work from home. Little did you know, Brian.
Yeah, it does really, these conversations are really hitting home in 2023 as, like, so many offices are having these same conversations about hybrid work. Because he's talking about how, like, people don't fill out sort of, like, time cards for, like, hours that they're working. Weirdly, their jobs are still getting done. But, so, the main boss lady says creativity doesn't punch a time clock. One of the workers says some of us work from home when we feel like it. And Brian says, and some of you take advantage of that. None of you, of course, to the people sitting there who seem to be everyone.
The whole group. Yeah.
And it's just like, literally, this is a conversation that the head of legal aid has been, like, word for word was a thing that the, like, head of legal aid was, like, on Zooms in town halls being like.
About the working from home stuff?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Was being like, I don't know. It's just like some people take advantage of it. No one on this Zoom, of course, when it was like there's like 100 people on the Zoom and she's
like,
met.
She doesn't know.
She's
you.
Met none of us.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Oh my God. That's so stupid. Like, again, does the work get done? That's the end of discussion.
Yeah.
That's it. Anyway. Yeah. He does not seem like a good boss. He also is like. He basically, like, displaces this woman from her job temporarily and her office, and then he's like, well, I'm gonna leave in a couple months, so, like, this is just, like, a temporary demotion, which I was like, why are you even doing that? Just, like, come in and be like, I'm consulting for a couple of months, and then I will leave.
Yeah.
You don't have to demote her. That's humiliating.
And I hated that the movie was then, like, towards the end, because he acquiesces a little, right? Like, he starts wearing, like, jeans sometimes, and he has, like, flowers on his desk, and she's like, oh, flowers and jeans, Brian Connor, taking life a little slower. But also, she says to him, like, oh, sales are up, morale is too, surprisingly, we were getting a little lazy and predictable, every shirt needs starch now and then. And I'm like, no, don't give him that movie.
Yeah, no.
You were not getting lazy, because sometimes people worked from home. Morale is definitely not up. Maybe sales are up if people, like, feel like they have to, like, hustle more or whatever. They're going to be fired by this guy.
Right, by this creepy,
like,
dude.
Morale is definitely not up. And how do you measure that, lady?
That's a great question. Yeah, because, again, you are still kind of the boss. So, like, people are still going to be like, yeah, things are great.
Anyway, so that is all said and seen. You want to talk more about this woman whose name I don't remember?
I don't remember this lady's name.
I have the IMDb up, though. I could.
Let's find out.
Tell you what this lady's name is.
Because she was done so many injustices in the movie.
Alana.
Okay, great. So Alana, for some reason, people in this movie cannot stop commenting on how hot she is. It's very weird. It's just, like, completely out of context. Like, someone will just be like, oh, that lady's hot. It happens at least twice. My favorite time that it happens is when he is on the call with his doctor friend and she, like, walks in and starts talking, and it's a video call, but the friend can't see her. And the friend's like,
no, it's not a video call. The video call's later.
Oh, the video call's later. Okay, this is just a voice call. The friend's like, who's that? She sounds hot. Which is an unhinged thing to say.
Knowing he's on speakerphone, he says, she sounds hot. Wanna date a doctor? And then Brian says she's married. And then the friend says, those things aren't mutually exclusive.
Which, like, is kind of funny, but also, like, what the fuck? What a weird thing to say.
And then, like, later when Julie comes, she comments on how pretty she is, too. And it's like, is it just because, like, this movie cast an attractive woman in a role that's not meant to be a love interest or the, like, foil to a love interest? And they're like, okay, we have to keep addressing the fact that she is an attractive woman, but she's married. She's not supposed to get with Brian, nor is she supposed to be the, like, ex-fiancé foil to the woman who's supposed to get with Brian. And Hallmark is like, we very rarely cast a woman that's not either of those things and is attractive. I don't know what
she's
to do with her.
She's just a lady doing her job. And Hallmark is like, ah! Kind of incredible.
Do you think they originally planned to cast, like, a really ugly person in the role? And then when they cast this woman, they're like, well, like, we gotta add some lines about how she's hot. Because, like, otherwise the audience
will get
is gonna
so
be
confused.
And how she's married. Because otherwise people are gonna be like, oh, she should get with Brian.
No one thinks that.
Literally,
she's
not
just
think
a
that.
Lady at work. Let her do her job and leave Brian out of it. Yeah, my other theory is that, like, she's married to the, like, director, and she was a big diva and was like, you have to, like, put some lines in about how I'm hot. That's my only other theory.
Wow, I love that. Let me see if I can find anything real quick on Anne-Marie DeLuise, who played that part. She's Canadian.
Great.
Her spouse is Peter DeLuise. Did he direct this?
I don't know. Click on him.
She was in 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, good for her.
She's worked a lot, but okay. Her most notable role was apparently in 50 Shades of Grey.
Okay, he is a director. So, I don't know, just saying.
Well, let's see. He was in a film called Solar Babies, which I want to know more about that.
Yeah, that sounds like our shit.
It doesn't look like he directed this film.
All right, well, there goes that theory.
Boom, boom, pow.
Maybe she was having an affair with the actual director. Now I'm just spreading rumors.
Who is the actual director of this film? Michael M. Scott. Michael Scott!
Michael Scott! I love that! Yes. Michael Scott, diversifying.
I mean, he did direct that one movie about Goldfinger. Midnight. Operation Midnight.
I never watched all the episodes of The Office, so. Wow.
All right, anyway. So strange.
It's just a very weird vibe.
Happy that they let a lady be the boss of something, but wish that they could do it without commenting on how hot she is all the time. Unless that's what she wanted, in which case, I guess good for her. I don't know. What wave of feminism are we on?
We've lost the thread.
I also just noted in 1960, they kept showing shots of bees, and I was like, well, definitely know it's in the past.
Aww.
We're losing all the bees.
Womp womp. Oh, no. I feel like the rest of it, like, I don't know, there weren't any other, like, huge glaring things for me.
Yeah, I mean, the rest of it was, like, 1960s husband being terrible to his 1960s wife in a way that the movie was like, isn't this terrible?
Right, yeah, and then the guy being like, hey, what if a marriage was a partnership? And I was like, that's cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for saying that, I guess.
What if a marriage was a partnership, but you still gave up your identity and changed your name to my name?
I guess Julie's character was a bit odd. Her whole, like, obsession with snooping in his house was really weird, but I guess that's, like, a thing that people do.
Yeah, I was also like, when she started looking around, I was like, Julie, what are you doing?
Like, what do you think you're gonna find? Like, panties in the, like,
little jewelry container?
Yeah, like, what are you looking for? And also, like, you have been broken up, and he, like, really fucked up. Like, why do you care what he...
And he just told you that he didn't really like you for a lot of the time you were together.
Yeah, what investment do you have in this man? Let him go, girl.
But she had just been at a wedding, so hard times.
I guess, but it just feels like that's not the tactic I would take. If I was like, I was at a wedding, I was really sad, kind of missed you, like, let's just hook up. Like, that's how I would approach it, probably.
Sure. But Hallmark would not allow that to happen.
All right, fine. Also, two hair notes, which are feminism.
Mm-hmm.
Julie's Bump It, previously mentioned. Mm-hmm. Just want to shout it out again, because 2010 is alive, and that made me feel good. And number two, Nora's hair, why did they not wig this woman? Justice for her hair. It was so limp and just, like, didn't read as 60s.
Yeah.
And, like, clearly, like, they either weren't using enough product if they were using her... They were clearly using her real hair because it was, like, not good. And they weren't using a 1960s amount of product in it because it was, like, very limp for much of the time. And it just didn't read as 60s. Like, just put a wig on her.
Yeah.
If you want her to look like she has 60s hair and you don't want to put that amount of product in it. Drove me crazy.
Fair.
All right.
Is it the best of times or the worst of times? Here's where we talk about if you should watch it, in what context we rate it on our doomsday clock on a scale from noon to midnight. Noon being notoriously it's so bad you have to gouge your own eyes out before you watch this movie. And midnight being notoriously it's so good it's like a party in your eyeballs that are still in your head because you don't have to gouge them out because it's so good that you just can watch this all the time.
Without maiming yourself.
Without maiming yourself. With all your friends. Every day. It's the best. Noon is bad. Midnight is good. Take it away, Helena.
Okay. I did not mind this movie. It was a bit slow. I thought that the pacing was off and confusing about the romance itself. But, like, it had a lot of things that I like. It's the kind of time travel movie that I usually go for. And I liked all the main stuff. That was fun. I think they could have gotten a little more silly with it, and that would have been, then it would have, like, had a little, jumped off the screen a little more. So not a great movie, but, like, not the worst Hallmark time travel movie we've watched. If you need, like, something very, I don't know, like, you don't want to think, and it just feels sort of like a... like a blanket, like a blanket around you, I guess. And maybe, like, put a blanket around you and have a cup of tea and maybe just fall asleep in the middle. Like, that's what this movie's for.
Helena says, with a blanket around
her. With a blanket around me right now. That's what this movie's for. And for that reason, I will give it a 6.5.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, this movie, I agree, was, like, fine. I wasn't, like, bored or wanting to gouge my eyes out. And was much less overtly problematic feminism-wise than a lot of the Hallmark movies we've watched. And as Helena said, you know, Maine is, like, the whitest place in the world. So for once, I will be like, I guess it is accurate that the only black person in this movie was his friend who was still in California.
Yep. Yeah. There was one Asian lady in Maine.
Yes. Not that that makes it okay.
Doesn't make it okay. We don't have to hew to that point of accuracy about Maine.
Yeah. I thought his friend was fun, by the way, and funny. We didn't really talk about him, but I'm glad that he got to be a doctor.
I mean, yeah, and not a cop.
Yes. Oh, thank God. Yeah, I will say, also, I love a Hallmark movie devoid of cops.
Can you believe not one single cop?
Crazy.
Wild.
Yeah, I didn't really care about Nora. I didn't think they made her super interesting. Maybe it was the hair. I don't know.
The hair was bad.
I want a story about... What did I say her name was? Alana?
Yeah, give me more Alana.
But yeah, I mean, I don't... You know, I'm not as much of a Hallmark blanket movie girl as Helena is, but I thought this movie was fine. I'll go 5.30.
Great. I think we did it.
I think we did it. And now we get to go eat dinner.
Great. And happy with that...
We'll be back in no time at all.